I am Daisy Mack, and this is Spiritual Mixtape. Today's episode is a conversation about change, the kind that creeps in really slowly, then arrives all at once. I sat down with writer, dietitian, and fellow music industry soul, Jessica Cording, to talk about transitions, signs from the universe, grief, fertility, and what it means to rewrite your operating systems, spiritually and emotionally. From doors literally falling off their hinges to feathers at funerals, this episode weaves the very real and the very divine. It's about trusting your body, honoring your spirit, and making space for what is really meant to come next. Whether you're navigating loss, insomnia, or your own inner turning point, Jess's story will meet you right where you are. Jess, I'm so glad that you're here. It's really, really lovely to see you. I know that people who are listening won't be able to see you apart from in the social clips, but it's wonderful to see you. How are you? How's life?
Oh my gosh, I'm good. I feel like, you know, it's been so wild, like, you know, since we first connected, which I think was either like late 2020 or early 2021, just how much has evolved since then and just what a wild journey it's been. And I'm very grateful for all of that.
Well, I love that you brought it there, because actually this is going to be my first question to you, because as Jess told you, actually you were my first ever interview, like where I was the interviewee. I'm not sure if that's even a real word. When I was starting out, and I think in those moments I felt more like Daisy from the music industry, and I know that we have that in common as well, Daisy from the music industry, then I felt like Daisy the health coach, or, you know, the many iterations I've got to Daisy the breathwork teacher and podcaster. I was most definitely not a podcaster then. So here's my question to you. So much has happened in the last 5-6 years, but it does feel like April, May, and June are a real closing out period. What do you feel is closing out for you physically, emotionally, or spiritually?
Well, I'm in a huge transition phase in my personal and professional life. You know, I said goodbye to some things in my professional life that were really holding me back. That's not to say like that's necessarily the case, was always the case. I think we go through seasons and there are points in our journey, and then we have to get to a point where we realize it's time to move on or time to make a shift. And, you know, so for me, I feel like I have been just kind of in this in-between stage and getting ready for a lot of new things, which is really wonderful and exciting. But it's been really interesting to just confront all my fears, all my insecurities, like, and really now that I have a little bit more space to get really honest with myself about where some of the problematic things come from, and really committing to operating in a more intentional way in my life.
Ooh, I love the fact that you use the word operating, because when we're recording this, we're in the middle of the eclipses. We've just had the Virgo eclipse and we're in Venus retrograde, which is, both of those two big elements are all about new operating systems. So I love that you are feeling the energy, bringing in new operating systems to your life. I was listening to you talk there, and I've actually got in front of me your book, A Little Book of Game Changers. And I feel like everything you just said is lifted straight from the pages of your book. So here are my next questions for you. Well, I was looking at it this morning. I was revisiting all the places in the book, and I was just like, turn your own dial, how to tap into motivation. We've got to get into that. But I want to ask you, first of all, girlfriend to girlfriend, what are the signs you were ready to move on? So when you're talking about, or what would your signs be?
So honestly, they got really loud. I definitely have had a history of staying in things too long, to the point where they're no longer healthy. But I found myself in a very physical relationship with the building that I was in. It started with getting locked out of the office space, and then engineering came in. They took the door off its hinges. They said they fixed it. They fixed the lock. They took the doorknob out. It kept happening. I got locked in that office. And then I had, and that was just the first, that was a few years ago. That was the first little sign that, you know, yes, I could see this as something that, you know, it's just a coincidence, but maybe something's trying to tell me I'm not supposed to be here. But I tried to set it aside, tried to be like, no, I've committed to this. I'm going to do this thing. And then a while later, another couple years goes by, and I had two very strange accidents happen in the same span of time. Mm. And I don't know if I've talked about these publicly ever, but I feel like I can share this with you and your audience. So one of which I there was like new construction done in that building in the space that I was in. And one day I was in the staff restroom washing my hands because there was – no, I was in the patient restroom washing my hands because there was no soap in the staff restroom, you know. And I look behind me at the door, which was closed, and I'm thinking that something doesn't look right about that door. But I, you know, I don't think anything of it. So I go to open that door and it falls in on me. This big, heavy, 100-pound door. And at first I was trying to push it off of me, thinking maybe I can do that naively, you know. But then I quickly realized, oh, no, this is going to squash me. This is going to be bad. So I moved out of the way sideways and it took out a sink and I miraculously walked away with only some bruises. It could have been really bad, but I was fine. You know, in a week I was healed. I was okay. But I was like, you know, maybe I should listen to this. But then about a week later, there was a big snowstorm. And I was told to show up, you know, no delayed opening, nothing, you know, everyone's expected to be there. So there, it's ice storm, snowing, I'm driving to work. My car skids off the road into a snowbank. And it's near, where there's a hill, like a drop. And I swear something was looking out for me. There was a sign that kept me, like a physical sign, like a traffic sign that kept my car from going down into the ditch. And once I realized I was okay and my car was miraculously fine, I thought, you know, within a year, this is going to be different. I'm not going to put myself in the situation. And I gave myself a year to plan and really think about what that would look like and what I really wanted instead. And I, you know, quietly started working towards that behind the scenes without telling anyone. But I just, I was done. I realized I was not going to put my life at risk for something that I didn't have to. So that was, you know, but that had been after me kind of that little niggle that's kind of telling you like, oh, you know, something, there might be something different for me, something else out there. Maybe it's time for a change, but I kept trying to be responsible and, you know, so it took something really loud for me to finally pay attention.
No, this was a way. Did you, now that you're out of it, when you look back, are there even more signs that you're like, oh, that was there? Or are you like, no, it was just the two that almost killed me?
Oh, no, there were many. And I, you know, what was interesting, I knew the whole time.
Oh.
And I think on to a degree, I think that made it even easier to make a decision and finally decide to make a change. Because I had all this data and I had made up my mind, but I wanted to do it right. And I wanted to preserve relationships and do it in a thoughtful way, as opposed to my younger Sagittarius self who'd just be like, burn it all down. Like, I was like, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do this more intentionally. But since then, I think what's been more meaningful is all of the signs, the positive signs, showing me that it was the right decision. Oh. And that's been very helpful.
Can you think of one positive sign you can share with us?
Well, something I find interesting is that I feel more connected to, like I feel like when I talk to the universe or the powers that be, I feel like I get more confirmation that someone's listening or something is listening. One interesting example was I had a situation where I do a lot of speaking engagements and a lot of like contractor projects. And, you know, with some changes in the United States government and their budgets, a client of mine had to, they were not able to pay me for a project and they had to cancel another project. I remember thinking, okay, well, that's kind of a big deal, but, you know, how can I, you know, I said, okay, universe, just help me make up this exact dollar amount. It just would really, I could use a little help. With an hour later, my phone rang with somebody needing someone to do a really exciting project for pretty much that exact dollar amount that I had been asking for help finding. So it was just, I was like, okay, that's a really nice sign. Thank you for reminding me.
Oh, I love that. Now, the thing is, I know you well enough to know that you are quite spiritual, to know that you are definitely, you find meaning in every part of life. And I know that we weren't like necessarily going to focus on the books, but can we talk about the farewell tour? Because when I first met you, I just thought that we were two cool people trying to make the world a healthier place. And then you started writing this book, or maybe it was like, maybe I gave you a quote for this book at like sometime in early knowing you, but we definitely bonded, or I felt bonded to you because of our dads. Like, we lost our dads at a similar time. And then your dad was in the music industry and had such a rad career, is the only way of putting it. Do you want to talk a little bit about your dad and like how writing the book helped you with your grief? And because a lot of people have found Spiritual Mixtape because they are on their own grief journey as well, whether that's leaving a big career or whether they've lost someone to cancer. So that those themes of grief and finding beauty from the grief are really relevant to the audience.
Yeah, it was so special to connect with you while working on that book. Like, I feel like that project, which it on the surface, it's a caregiver's guide to taking care of yourself, you know, well, so you can be a better caregiver. But, you know, there's all these stories with, you know, my father, for background for you guys listening, is that my dad worked in the promotion side of the music industry. Like, he worked his way up from like hanging posters as a college kid to like working, you know, in promotions and management. You know, he was at a major record label for many years. And I interviewed a number of the artists that he worked with as well, just about their experience of staying well or not on the road. And because I found that the caregiver journey in many ways, you know, you could draw a lot of parallels between that and supporting a music artist on the road. But, you know, my dad, he was just this larger than life guy. And it's funny, he didn't consider himself a spiritual person. But now that he's on the other side, like my first talk about signs. Oh, my goodness. Like, he's that. I still talk to him all the time. He shows up in my dreams in really interesting ways. And his thing is feathers. And there's a whole chapter in that book all about feathers and my first experience with a feather when he passed away. Because he knew that was a thing that was important to me. And my mom and my sister, because I started seeing feathers in my mid-20s. That was when I started kind of connecting feathers to the spiritual world. And my dad knew about that. And when he passed away, my mom found a feather as she was leaving the hospital. My sister found a feather like the next day. And then a couple days ago, I'm like, okay, Dad, what the hell? Like, where's my feather? I'm the one with the feather thing. Where is it? Like, and so at the wake, which was a really interesting experience because it's both celebratory because my dad just had all these incredible people in his life who loved him so much and yet also grief. But I remember I was standing there by the casket, you know, in the front of the room. And so American singer-songwriter Willie Nile, who is just the kindest human on the planet, but he walks in the room, just little ball of energy. He starts walking down the, you know, the aisle towards me in the casket. And I see he's wearing a big feather necklace. the necklace with a big ass feather on it. And I was like, we've never met in person before, but I need to tell you a story about feathers. So that
your dad sent you a whole human.
It was just so him, you know? And there is a whole chapter in the book where I interview Willie and he talks about spirituality. And I mean, that was a big part of what made that book so special to work on, because it was, honestly, it was such a dark time in my life. I was really struggling with trying to be a 9-to-5-er. I was in the middle of like a really, you know, in the beginnings of a really challenging fertility journey. We were living in my mother's house because we couldn't, our house, we were looking for a house. I had terrible insomnia despite working on a book with better sleep in the title. But getting to have conversations with people from my dad's life or people I brought in and connected with from the wellness world, just talking to people about grief and spirituality and what it means to be physically, mentally, emotionally well, it was just such a gift. Not that I got paid very much to do that book. People don't really make much money on books anymore. But just the idea that someone gave me a little tiny advance to like do this was like, it blew my mind. And I'm still grateful for that experience of writing the book.
Oh, I love that. And I love the, well, there's a few things to unpack from all of that. So the first one is, I guess, spirituality and grief. If you were to give anyone your potted history or like your mini version of why they go hand in hand, or what your advice is, or what you would just, if someone came up to you and was just like, spirituality and grief, like I'm doing, spirituality and grief, tell me, like, what's the one thing that you'd want to impart onto them about the two?
Yeah, well, I think that spirituality can be very helpful in navigating grief. You know, two of the most useful things that people shared with me about grief when my father passed, that I clearly remember, one was that the journey, the grief journey is not linear. And the second was the only way is through. And I respect that there are people who don't have any kind of spirituality. I respect that there are people who have a very specific doctrine is not the word, but a very specific belief system that they were raised in, that is what they adhere to. I have a lot more blurred lines. You know, my parents were not the same religion, and my mother worked in, she's a psychotherapist, but also a hypnotherapist. So I grew up with a lot of exposure to all different schools of thought on spirituality. And I find that what I will say about in my own life is that my spirituality and feeling still connected to loved ones who've passed and feeling very much in tune with the flow of energy, that I find that that makes the grief in some ways feel much lighter. Mm. It makes it easier to just tap into the moments that bring you joy and the memories that are happy, and being able to spot the signs even, you know, being open to that, I guess I should say. That I have found so much comfort in.
I'm going to move you straight on to another topic that, again, is very popular on the podcast, is sleep in it. And because you mentioned insomnia, and I remember so clearly in the little book of Game Changers, you talking about writing on the treadmill at night. So I guess it's two questions. Like, what did you do then? Because I feel like pre-COVID, how I would handle a sleepless night so wildly different to post-COVID. And I don't think that's, well, I'm sure it's partly an age thing, but we just live in a wildly different world to back then. So what would you have done pre-COVID to help you sleep? And what would you do now to help you sleep?
That's such a great question. And, you know, pre-COVID, it's funny. I have to remind myself that my life was so wildly different pre-COVID. You know, for so much of that time, I was like single and just working my face off in New York City. And then I got married during COVID on Zoom. I was one of those. And so I remember early days of lockdown, my then fiance, now husband, and I, we were living in our studio, in my studio apartment with the two cats. So it was a very different life. But pre-COVID, like, something I didn't know when I was younger that was very helpful to learn in my own sleep healing journey was that, you know, during the night, we really don't want to do daytime things. So while I thought that going down to the treadmill in my building and walking while I did stuff on the phone, like, was soothing, in a lot of ways, I can recognize now it was just activating my brain and further disrupting my melatonin levels and further, you know, driving, you know, stressful thoughts. But I think I would just physically exhaust myself so much that I would be able to get back to sleep. But I was not maintaining a consistent sleep schedule. One thing that definitely changed that wasn't an intentional change, but I stopped drinking alcohol during COVID. It wasn't intentional exactly, but I just started noticing that it made me feel terrible. And it also, you know, when I started trying to get pregnant and I took a little break to try to get my hormones on track, not realizing that it probably didn't matter what I did. Like, it was just like very little in my control. I found that I just felt so much better without alcohol. And so when I was working on the farewell tour, I was living in my mother's house with my husband. I wasn't drinking alcohol, and sleepless nights looked really different. So I found myself, I did finally see a sleep specialist who helped me use cognitive behavioral techniques for insomnia, so CBTI, which was life-changing. But it did require just making yourself go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, even if you were up for a few hours in the night. I really leaned into, and this is still what I do if I can't sleep, journaling. So helpful for me because the mind for me starts going if I wake up, or shower, like a quick shower just to kind of bring my core body temperature back down. That I find very helpful. And I didn't have those tools pre-COVID.
I just think we all are healthier. And so interesting what you're saying about alcohol. I stopped drinking as well. I think a lot of people did. Some people went the other way. And then some of us were like, you know what? I'm okay without this. This is, and also for the first time ever, the world is not judging me because the world is really busy looking and worrying about its own nest. So that felt good. And I've never thought about cognitive behavioral therapy as the root out of things. I mean, I would tell people, you know, go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time. And I've never really put together that's like a behavior. Like, I've never actually given it a label. Now I have.
There's a whole protocol. It's like, it's a 90-day like,
oh, wow,
journey. But it really helped me so much. And it helped me help other people with sleep issues.
I mean, how good though, if you have had sleep disturbances your whole life, how good to just like to think just 90 days. And at the end of those 90 days, it will be better. Like, how easy. The other thing you've touched on a couple of times is fertility. And instead of getting into the story around your journey, what is your advice? Because as someone who's 41, I chose not to have children, which is a different conversation about like choosing to be child-free. But I would say that pretty much 80%, maybe 85% of my friends have had a fertility journey, whether they've had difficulty conceiving or whether they've gone through IVF. And I would say it's as much as that, about 85, maybe they were okay with the first child, not with the second child. And there isn't a lot of help out there. There's definitely people talking about it now who are our age, but there isn't a wealth before that. Again, like this sort of like pre-COVID, I feel like nobody talked about it. And I don't even know if there was like a bit of shame around IVF, Whereas now I'm like, everybody has a story. We should be sharing more. I asked you how long a full term was at the beginning of this. There's wild that we don't know enough about the process.
Yeah, it's, I honestly, I learned so much. You know, I was one of those people where I wasn't sure if I would ever want children. Like, I kind of figured, like, well, I'll know when I meet my partner, like, if that's in the story or not. And then when I met my husband, I was like, ah, okay, I get it. This is the human I'm supposed to have, like, raise a family with. And whether that means a family of cats or other creatures or humans. But, you know, I found something I was not prepared for, because people, maybe they talk about it more now, but I, you know, when I was going through this, it was like 2021, which used to not be a long time ago, but you know, here we are. It was really, you know, people talk about their fertility journey, but I would joke about it being a spiritual quest. 'Cause it really, for me, it really forced me to look at what was going on in my, yes, in my body, but, and that was its own journey. I learned all these things about all these different issues I had that I had no idea about, because I had been on the pill for like 15 years. Because I mean, you know, when you're like 19 and your doctor's like, do you want a pill to, like, you know, and like go have sex? And I was like, yes, that sounds wonderful. Like, let's do that. But then, you know, I didn't know about any of the risks of that. And, you know, I went off the pill before I was really ready emotionally. I went off of it. I hope this isn't too much of an overshare, but I know other people have stories like this. When I actually had to have my first breast biopsies, I was 35, and, you know, I'd been having all clear screenings since I was 30, because family history, dense breasts, yada, yada. But I had been working in a breast oncology center for about 6 months. And then go figure, they find stuff in each breast that needs to get biopsied. And then they tell me about the 25% increased risk with birth control pills. And I was like, great. Thankfully, everything was benign, as were the next two biopsies I had during the time that I was working there. Again, I feel like my body was trying to tell me something on many levels. And, you know, the breast is just so much about nurturing and the heart chakra. I sound like my mother, but I really do believe that. And, you know, and the fertility journey for me was so much about confronting old traumas related to, you know, I mean, I definitely am someone who has big T trauma in my past, like many people. And that certainly had to be looked at and taken into account and healed during this fertility journey. But it also, you know, I had to question my daily habits and really build new, more self-compassionate habits that would help my body feel safe. That was a huge, huge journey for me. You know, and just self-acceptance, that was really, you know, but then even just dealing with getting to know your body, like, it was so interesting to be 35 and just starting to, for the first time, really understand my own menstrual cycle. I felt like an angsty teenager again in some ways, and, you know, kind of getting back in touch with things that I thought were way in the past and finding out new things about stuff. And it was just really, it was a learning experience. But I also found that, you know, and I had several miscarriages throughout that journey before I realized that there was something else going on. At first, I was like, oh, it's a fluke. It's, you know, this is just a thing that happens. And then, you know, I finally started to look at, like, family history and personal health issues and, you know, be willing to forgive myself and forgive. There was a lot of forgiveness involved, because women, I think when it comes to pregnancy and the body, there's so much pressure. And that was, you know, really hard. But when I finally opened up about my pregnancy losses and about the struggles I was having, and I didn't open up a lot. I just mentioned, like, I think after my third miscarriage, I shared something about it. And just the outpouring of support from other women who experienced that. Well, that's the thing. I was like, you know, other people go through this. This is so common. And it ended up, you know, I ended up finding community in all of that. And, you know, and our story actually has a lot of eventually, well, not the original plan, like a lot of happy things, you know, that eventually I'll get to share publicly. But, you know, so even if my journey didn't end up in the traditional way that people think, you know, it's, you know, when you talk about having a family, there's no one correct way. And that's not talked about enough either.
No, all of these. I really hope the next 5 years, if we started this podcast talking about what's closing, I hope that what's opening is an open forum, an ability to share without guilt or shame, and also the ability to just be stupid in it, like as in ask the stupid questions. But like, I really knew nothing about pregnancy until my friends got pregnant and were telling me some of the things that happened. I'm like, stop, this is wild. Yes. I sort of understand why nobody wants to talk about it, in the sense that you may never have children if you knew what your body has to go through. But also, it robs us of the opportunity to be there for one another and to marvel at how incredible these bodies are, that we literally, you know, you talk about going on the pill. Sorry, mum, but I was on the pill at 15. And that wasn't because I was out there having sex, although great idea, I agree with you. It was because I had really heavy periods, and I still do to this day. And I know that we actually have tons of guy listeners. We have an equal audience. So this is definitely a more get in touch with your feminine side, guys. But us women don't talk about this enough. Like, I was having heavy periods at 15, and the answer to it in the 90s was to go on the pill. And for me at 15, it felt very grown up to be given the pill. And actually, I was on it for like 10 years and then came off of it. But it, like, my periods of, they were always heavy, really. There was never really a, and that's just a sign of, like, you've got to switch up your progesterone. I never understood what hormones were in my body. And it does lead on to other problems. I mean, this is probably a whole other, I reckon we have like two podcasts out of all the things that we don't get to talk about on this one. But there are two things I want to bring into this to just bring our guys back into the conversation. you touched on forgiveness. And the reason I bring this up is I have an amazing male client who is on a real journey with forgiveness. And obviously you came to it from a place of like healing your body and your soul. But it does feel like, well, look, it's a universal theme, forgiveness. But I feel like people are forgiving on such a deep and cellular level. We used to forgive on almost a surface level. Like, you've done something bad to me, but you know what? It hurt my heart and I'm ready to forgive you. And that's big. Like, let's not underestimate that. But this ability to forgive yourself for the ways you've not lived up to society norms or your standards, I just think it's so beautiful, and it's a way to sleep better at night, but it's really hard to do. So I guess my first question is, and we're coming to the end of all of this, we're going to fly the plane home, as they say. But on a journey, on a forgiveness journey, what is one thing that you could do to be kind to yourself as you begin to unravel and unpick the fact that you do need to, like, forgive your own behavior and forgive your own shortcomings?
Yeah, I mean, I think about this a lot. And something that I always come back to is checking in with yourself about what you need and not being afraid to let yourself experience that, you know, taking care of yourself. You know, almost like I love animals, and if you would see me with my cats, if you follow me on Instagram, you see my cats all the time. But like, just how tender we are towards animals and how patient we are with them, hopefully. You know, and just, I think to extend yourself the same love, the same level of care, and even little things like, you know, make sure you have like fresh food and clean water and sunshine and love. Like, that's all really important. And I know sometimes we may feel like for whatever reason that we don't deserve that, for whatever perceived shortcoming, you know, is in the mix. But we all deserve to be taken care of, and taking care of yourself and forgiving yourself for, you know, something that you feel makes you unworthy or that you don't feel good about. You know, I think you deserve that forgiveness.
Oh, I love that. That was the public service announcement. You are worthy. You deserve love. So vital. So the final question then of the podcast. We've been on our journey of forgiveness. We've grieved. We've done a lot in like 20, 34 minutes. But we talked about closings. In the next 5 years, and you'd actually said this very sweetly when you were talking about being squashed under a sign in your car, and you said, in a year, things will look different. If this is a moment, because it energetically, everything in astrology says that this is the year of endings and next year is the year of beginnings. What is one beginning you really want to get behind, you really want to see?
Well, what is coming up for me is more space.
Oh.
And I mean that in a positive way. You know, I think like intentionally carving out space and giving, you know, for myself, especially giving myself space. Because when we are able to give ourselves space to breathe, process, rest, we're better able to show up for others and take care of others. And it's really easy to lose sight of that. But I struggle with it a lot. So that's, I think, probably why I'm so focused on it, because I know I need to be. But that is something I would love to call in more intentional healing space.
Oh, well, I mean, I know one way that people can get more intentional healing space. They can subscribe to your Substack, which has the most wonderful information, articles on basically everything that your podcast does, but in the written form. I am a big fan of Substack. I love the idea of writing. And I do think of you, we were saying this before we started recording, or I was saying it before we started recording, as much as you're a dietitian and a health coach, I think of your medium as being a writer, an author. So it's wonderful to get I miss magazines. I miss papers. I know that they still exist, but it's not the same. And I love that Substack. I can just go in and get a dose of you. And you're very, very good at doing the regular updates at least once a week of here are my tips. Here are the ways in which you can create more space, better health, all the things. So I'll make sure that I drop your Substack into the show notes. But is there anything that you want to add?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can find me jessicacording.substack.com. But if you like being on social media, I spend most of my time on Instagram. So I'm just at jesscording. I'm a little old for TikTok, but I think I'm technically there too. And I have a YouTube channel, all the things. But my podcast is Drama-Free Healthy Living. And I do some solo episodes. I also feature experts like Daisy. She's been on the show. And, you know, I love getting to have these conversations with people.
Is there a meditation somewhere that I read? Where's there a meditation? Because that's people on this podcast love a meditation. Tell them where they can find your meditation.
So yeah, on my Substack, if you go into 2024 and earlier, there are a whole bunch of meditations, and I'm planning to bring them back at some point. I had to take a little break in 2025 to work on some other things, but I've been trying to figure out a good way to bring them back. So I'm excited for that. So there are more coming. And occasionally I host live virtual events where I do meditations and stretching classes and things of that nature. So it's, so if you connect with me, if you want to stay in the loop, I share a lot of free content and free resources.
Jess, you have been an absolute treat. Thank you for sharing beautifully, honestly, and vulnerably with us today. We are grateful.
Oh, and it is so nice to be here with you. Thank you so much for having me.